Welcome in to the Odds and Audibles podcast. I'm Matt Prem, Eric Scopel on the show. And guys, it's Friday, March 8th. And in less than a week, the football program at the University of Oregon will be on the practice field doing activities, doing practice. Coaches will be evaluating. They'll be working towards the 2024 football season in an official capacity with spring football starting March 14th. They will have two practices. It used to be three. Now it's two.
Mm-hmm.
And then they take like a 2.5 week siesta and come back for the remainder of spring football in April. But spring football, it's right around the corner. Eric and I are excited for it. We were just off air doom and glooming about the basketball teams that we cover. So there's going to be some positivity in our voices, because we're going to be talking about a program that's on the upswing, unlike those other two programs. And Eric, we're going to talk a lot, a bunch of different topics around spring football. And let's start with two players that were kind of thinking, hey, there's a lot to gain here. You wrote a story recently on the site about it. You had more than two guys.
I did.
I will let you go first because you had the list, and I'll throw in my two selections after yours as well.
You want me to go with both first right away?
Sure. Let's go boom, boom.
Yeah. There's a lot of different ways to go here. I think the first, it was easy to pick one just because I think this spring is really imperative for the whole offense with this one player, and that's Ayapani Lalalu.
Yeah.
And I look at him and think, you know, what we just saw with Jackson Powers Johnson at center, being a first-year guy who hadn't been the starting center kind of in Poncho's shoes a year ago, I think it's way too much to ask Poncho to have a year like that, where he's an All-American, where he's the Remington Award winner. Obviously, Poncho can't become a first-round pick, but that's the kind of year Jackson had. I think it's really important for this offensive line if it's going to maintain itself as a Joe Moore Award, you know, finalist kind of group, or a group that's going to have multiple all-conference offensive players, that Poncho really steps up. And I don't think he has to be the best player on that group of five. I think he probably shouldn't be. I think that would be a concern if he outperforms a Johnny or Josh. But I think it's really important that he plays well. And I think because center is a position where there's so much more than just some of the physical stuff, for a young player, being confident in his calls, building chemistry with who the quarterback will be, and we think that's going to be Dylan Gabriel, building chemistry with the rest of the line, gaining their trust, right? Because everybody around him is going to be a couple years, in some cases, 3 or 4 years older than he is. So I think it's really important that he solidifies himself at center. Obviously, there will be a competition. I don't even necessarily know who that will be with at this point, aside from like Bryce Bolton, who was a freshman last year who didn't play, who we know is playing center. There's a couple walk-ons, you know, between like Cannon Rossi and I'm blanking on another name, which I should certainly have. But, you know, there's not a real contender, a strong list of contenders to beat him out for the job. But I just think from his development, this is a big spring. Still, you have to remember he had some great moments last year, but he was a true freshman. And this is going to be his first opportunity to really lock down this job. So I think it's a huge spring for Poncho. I think we'll come out of it with optimism. But I think you go into it going, I love the player. I love the family. I love the story. I thought he played really well when he got an opportunity last year, but he's stepping into a big shoes here. So I think it's imperative he has a really strong spring.
Are you thinking also of Dave Iuli and Bryce Bolton, two other guys that had some action at center?
Bolton was one. Iuli's a good name. No, I was thinking of a walk-on, and I'm just totally blanking on his
Pickard?
Name. Yes, thank you very much. Charlie Pickard, yes. I just completely blanked on which I was frustrated with because I know the name. But, yeah, those are the types of candidates right now. And it's possible that he's challenged by somebody we're not talking about. But, yeah, there's not like a real clear cast of characters at center other than Poncho. And I think that will be his job. But I think it's a big spring. And then my second one here, I went with Evan Stewart. Just because I think, you know, and there's kind of an interesting cross-section here where both Poncho and Stewart, I think, have to develop chemistry with Dylan Gabriel. And I think, you know, Dylan Gabriel is probably the most important person in terms of stuff to gain, even though we know he's going to be the starter. But he's got to find, you know, chemistry with a lot of different players. He's got to develop, you know, an understanding of what Will Stein wants to do. Will Stein has to develop understanding of what Dylan's strengths are to kind of build out this offense. But Stewart in particular, I think that's a guy you expect to come in and be really productive. We've talked about him a lot. I think it's really important he and Dylan get on the same page. It's also really important that he probably proves he needs to be that starting X receiver in place of Troy. And so I think it's really important he has a good spring. I think especially when you hear some of the stuff from College Station, you know, about maybe off the field he was a little difficult, maybe a little temperamental. Does he love the game? These are some of the questions you heard coming out of Texas A&M. You want to come out of spring feeling like this guy is fully bought in. He's here for the right reasons, and he is ready to be a focal point. So I think it's a big spring for him, especially in terms of the receivers, to get comfortable with Gabriel, because if those two can develop a connection, that'll be really big for this pass offense.
I'm curious, did your selections go like this is important for their NFL prospects, or how much did you factor in like, hey, we know this guy is going to be successful, but how successful will he be, or will this guy even play? Because I think I went in the
lab. Yeah. I think we went the opposite direction. I went more like for the team and for these individual, like for Evan, yeah, the NFL part, like he needs to prove, he has a lot to prove this year to be a first round pick, which is where some people think he'll be. But yeah, I went more like these guys are going to be starters. It's important that they take these steps. But yeah, there's a bunch of guys in the other group. I'm curious to see who you picked who fit that as well, where they're trying to establish themselves in some sort of a role.
I'll start, and it's right there in that kind of a role. It's a guy that's started 19 games in his career, Jaleel Florence at corner.
There you go.
But this is his opportunity in spring ball to kind of push himself to be the number one corner on the team. But the reality is, like, Dan Lanning is not afraid to try and upgrade talent even when there's returning talent there. And they've added Jabbar Muhammad from Washington, Cam Alexander from UTSA, and then they've also thrown in Brandon Johnson, who maybe isn't going to be a regular corner for Oregon, could be more of a nickel, but that's also a position we've seen Florence play. I think this is – Florence is going to play in 2024, but – I think this spring is going to be about him like really cementing himself as one of those top two corners on the roster. Because if he doesn't play well, they have brought in other players, whether it's through the portal or whether it's coming in from like a high school ranks, Dakota Fields being one of them, where they're going to try and upgrade that position. And Florence could be a guy that he rises to the top of the competition and has a huge year. And then he's off maybe to the NFL as a junior and everyone's not surprised, or he gets beat out. And all of a sudden it turns into a, like you're coming back for your senior year, but you're not really like a full-time starter anymore. You got beat out by other players. Like, I think there's a lot here for Florence. It's kind of one of those, like, I'm not like doubting his talent, but they've definitely upgraded the position. They've brought in a lot of players at that position, and it's up to him to kind of continue to rise and raise his level of play. And then I went on the other side of the ball, and you did a receiver. I'm going to do another one. It's Gary Bryant Jr.
Yeah.
A guy that started a lot last season for the Ducks and excuse me, and could, you know, he started 12 of the, I think 13 or 14 games that he played.
Every game he was healthy, he started, yeah.
Yes, and he may not start next season. Evan Stewart's here. Tez Johnson's back. Trayshawn Holden's back. And then they have added a bunch of talent from the high school ranks. And they could, you know, depending on what happens in the portal in the spring, I don't think it's going to happen, but, you know, maybe some surprise there. They could add another guy, maybe. And I don't know if Gary Bryant is going to be a definitive starter next season. There's Troy Franklin's gone, obviously, but this is I feel like this is a make or break year for Bryant, even for next season, because if he solidifies himself into the role and kind of builds off what was a solid year last season for the Ducks. It's kind of as their fourth receiver. He positions himself to be maybe that leader, that veteran presence that you lean on in 2025. But if he's just kind of in the mix everywhere, they've got a bunch of freshmen on this roster. They've got two more coming in next year. It wouldn't surprise me if some of these younger guys get to his level and then surpass him in 2025. So just from a career arc standpoint, I think there's a lot on the line for Gary Bryant this spring and just kind of what plays out in that area. I do like you sticking with two offensive guys. One other defensive player that I went back and forth. I was like, do I do Gary Bryant or do I do this guy? And that's Keon Ware Hudson at nose tackle. Yeah. He's played a lot of football, but it's never been really as a starter or even as like the number one bench guy at that position. He has just four career starts and five seasons of football. He has played a ton of football though. It's like almost 50 games, I think, in his career. So he's going to get up to 60 something. But there's a lot on the line here for him as well. If he comes back and, you know, playing time is going to be there, but can he get it? Cause there's a bunch of new faces coming in as well.
Yeah, no, I like the on the first two, there's kind of interesting parallels there with, you could say, is Jahleel in threat of being this year's Tryquez Bridges, where last year Tryquez was a starter. In 2023, he was not and kind of played a bit role. Gary Bryant, could he be this year's Chris Hudson, where, again, the year before that, he was a starter, second, you know, one of the more productive receivers, and then Chris Hudson, we know what happened this last year. Now, I'm probably more confident that these two guys are talented enough and well good enough positions to hold on to their position. I think the Jahleel one, I want to know where he's at health-wise. I think that's a concern.
That's a good point.
Because we know he didn't play in the bowl. I think he might be still dealing with something. So I don't even know what his availability will be for. I bet he won't practice in the first two here.
Yeah.
We'll see what happens when they reconvene in April. I don't have a great feel for what his injury recovery is, but that's something to monitor there. Gary is one I wanted to just note. I know there's people in the comments who were pushing the Trayshon over Gary angle when I did my two deep, whenever we did that back in February. And I was pretty resolute in this is what the order should be. Just because I think that's what the order should be, because Gary started and out-snapped Trayshon last year, doesn't mean I'm closed-minded to the idea that Gary doesn't start. Like, I don't necessarily love Gary enough as a player to be like, he has to play more than Trayshon. Gary is the better blocker and the more reliable catcher of the football. Trayshon provides things physically that Gary lacks. So, you know, while I would still lean Gary pretty heavy here, if I were to create a two deep, which I just did, by the way, again, if you want to go take a peek at that on Monday or Tuesday of this week, I posted an updated two deep. Gary, I still had as the number one Z receiver. I think it's possible that, yeah, to Matt's point, like, could Trayshon make a move? Could Jurion make a move, or Kyler, or the freshman you brought up? I mean, there's, you know, I think this is going to be a different kind of spring for Junior Adams. And I know last year was similar where they brought in a lot of transfer players and you had to sort it out. But, you know, you have two of three starters back from last year. Like Tez and Gary basically started every single game that they played together or that they were available, I should say. And is that still the case this year? I don't know. I think it's going to be interesting. I do think Gary really could be challenged by several guys, but I'd still lean with him. And Keon, I think you summed that up well. I don't have a whole lot else to say there. I don't think the ceiling is super high, but can he finally kind of take on a bigger role in what will be, I think, his final season? I don't know with the portal stuff or the COVID stuff has made it so hard to track who still has eligibility. I think Keon is done after this year.
He is done after this. He played three games in 19 and redshirted. And then as a redshirt freshman in 2020, that's the COVID year. He played all seven games, but that doesn't count towards his eligibility. And then in 2021, he played 10 and started three as a redshirt freshman, as a redshirt sophomore in 2022. He played in all 13 games, started one game. And then as a redshirt junior this past year in 2023, zero starts, but 13 career games or 13 games played. So quick math, 36 46 career games under his belt, just under 50.
Yeah.
He could get to 60 if things play out that way, or maybe more in his career. But again, just four total starts. And this maybe slides into position battles we're most interested in seeing. And I'll go first. Maybe it's the really easy one. That's defensive line, because like we mentioned, you know, Popo's gone, Taki Tiamani's gone, Casey Rogers is gone, Brandon Dorlus is gone. And all of a sudden, there's a huge gap of experience and production. And Keon's the most experienced, you know, the guy that's played the most football of this group, but he doesn't have, you know, Jordan Burch started more games in his one season at Oregon than Keon Wade Hudson has started over five years for the Ducks. So there's that. And then you've got a whole bunch of freshmen that are showing in, you know, showing up last year, showing up this season. And then we also know of the big portal addition, Jamari Caldwell. I'm real curious. This is the one I wish we could watch all of practice because the combinations, who fits where, the position versatility, like all of those things we don't know a ton about, and we won't learn a lot until the spring game. And then even then, it's how much do we take this as this is what's going to happen in a game, or is this guy playing this one role because of depth issues for splitting up the roster in two, or is this a real possibility? And then how much do they actually want to show us during the spring game? This is the one where it's going to be really hard, especially for Jared, does the depth chart to project, because the combinations are endless of what you could do here.
It was my pick as well. I'll touch on another one because there's several that are worth bringing up, but I think the intrigue with the defensive line is you've already laid out the fact so many guys are gone. You basically have every job open aside from, I think Jordan is pretty clearly going to be, you know, they used him in a couple different roles last year, whether it be kind of standing edge player, whether it was a hand down as a defensive end in that 3-4 front. I think I'm just going to say he's your starting defensive end and leave it there. The other spots are wide open, and then basically every position in terms of the depth is wide open. So if you're looking at it too deep and you want to say there are six players or nine players, depending on if you're including edge or not, like I think four or five of the six spots in the two deep are open and for the interior guys. And that makes for some really interesting stuff. And then it's the fact that there's so many of these true freshmen, and this is undoubtedly the most talented back-to-back defensive line hauls this program has ever had. I don't even think it's that close. Obviously, like when they got DeForest and Eric Armstead and Balducci in one year, that was probably the best individual class to this date in my mind. Haloti came in the same year as Igor, or were those guys different years?
This is Igor redshirted. Igor redshirted one year, and then they were, and then Haloti the following year showed up. That's why. So that's how they were the
same year.
Same year.
Okay. Yeah, I know. So I was trying to go back and think of other defensive line hauls, but this is an incredible defensive line haul from a rankings perspective and from a talent perspective. So seeing all these guys work, I'm with you, Matt. I wish we could just, and the other part we should note, defensive line drills are on the opposite side of the field from where we get to be. So we won't even get to really watch the new guys move the sleds and do any of the technique stuff, which kind of stinks, but unless they change practice for spring, which I don't think they will. But yeah, that's a great pick. I'm really excited to watch, especially just all the young guys with what Oregon has there, and kind of how it all fits together. I don't know how much of a picture we'll really get during spring. Hopefully the spring game, we get some information, but I'm going to be really excited about that. And then I'll stick with a defense because I think you've already kind of touched on it. I think cornerback is really fascinating. You bring back basically a full-time starter when he was healthy in Jaleel Florence, and you've added two guys who were high-end starters at their past school, and you've got a bunch of young guys. I just think it's wide open, and while I do think Jaleel Florence ultimately winds up being a starter, I'm confident in his talent. I think he has real NFL potential. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if he has a strong senior like season, like you said, that it's his last, and he's a guy you're talking about as a first through third round draft pick, probably not a first, but he has the physical tools to be special. But there's also a possibility like, hey, does Jabbar Muhammad lock down one spot, which I think that's the expectation. And is Cam Alexander just good enough to beat him out? Or do we see one of these young freshmen or redshirt freshmen or sophomores come in and push him? So I think that is going to be really fun and fascinating to watch. So I think those are the two on defense that stand out. And on offense, we've kind of run through them all, but I'll also bring up right guard just because there's not a real clear, obvious starter. They hit Bedford in the portal. You figure they probably brought him in to start, but they brought in Nishad Strother last year to start, and the guy didn't play really at all. So, and Strother's still on the roster, so you could see those two guys competing. Dave Iuli, I think, is another name to know there. But offensively, I think right guard is, to me, the biggest one to kind of look at.
The guard one's an interesting one because, like you just pointed out, Strother did not really – he got hurt at fall camp. Mm-hmm. Right before the season started. So maybe that impacted things. And then, you know, maybe Stephen Jones's development or Marcus Harper's development at left guard just kind of set the table for what they were going to be the whole year. And Strother could just never get back. Or maybe Strother just wasn't as good as expected. Or maybe we inflated what his possibility will be. But nonetheless, like kind of in the same boat with Bedford now. Like,
yeah.
We're just, you brought up, we're just kind of assuming he's going to be the starter, but maybe something happens. Maybe something transpires where it's something different. And that's kind of one of those sneaky, like, we think this is what it's going to play out, but the year before it didn't go this way. And maybe it's the same case.
Well, and we also remember last year was also Junior Anguilau who came in. It was both he and Strother. It was like one of these guys is going to start. And then they played like 100 combined snaps. And I know Anguilau was injury, but I just think the portal guard thing is interesting. Like this is two straight years they've added a guy or two. And last year, the guys they added didn't end up really working out the way people thought they would.
I want to maybe make a quick audible here. The next one on the docket for us was most new, interested newcomer we're excited for. Do we want to go high school and portal?
Let's do that because it's going to get kind of boring if we're just talking. We've already talked about these newcomer portal guys so much.
Yes. And then on top of that, like, you can take him if you really want to, but I'm not going to talk about Gabriel. Like, okay. That's such an obvious answer.
It was my portal answer for newcomer. Well, there's a lot of other ones we can go into.
We know why.
We do.
Do you want to go first and I'll go second?
Sure. I did initially pick Gabriel. We've all talked about it. Obviously, he's the newcomer I'm most excited to watch because he plays the position that's most important. And if we were to come out of spring being like, this guy's not that good, that would be really concerning. I think there's almost no chance that's the case, by the way, just to be clear. I'll pivot, and this is somebody I don't know if we've talked about a ton. I think Jay Harris is somebody I'm just like really – and it's more of like an intrigue pick as opposed to a – he might be really valuable to the team. But if we're just talking about who I want to watch, running backs do run their drills right in front of us. So we can actually kind of get a sense for what they can do from a movement perspective when they're kind of going through some of their position drills. So that provides something to us at least watch. B, there's so many different perspectives on this. Like when he first signed, I'd heard from a couple of people, like the expectation he was going to be really special and that he could actually push to maybe really be in that rotation with Jordan James and Noah Whittington. And then I'm seeing other people say he doesn't have a scholarship and that this was like a real kind of shot in the dark. He's maybe not going to be, and these aren't people that I necessarily, these aren't sources around Oregon, but these are people talking about the addition kind of in our field of work. So, I don't know which way it's going to go. He's a Division II player. He doesn't really have film. Like he has highlight videos on YouTube that you can go find that are from local television broadcasts, but he doesn't like have like a huddle highlight page from his D2 year, at least that I've been able to find. If someone has found it, go ahead and toss it in the comments on this show. Cause I'd love to see it. But I just think he's a total unknown to a certain degree. So I'll pivot and go with him as my most intriguing portal addition. And then go ahead. Yeah.
I'm really surprised you didn't pick Atticus Sappington, the kicker.
Well, we're going to watch a lot of him too.
You get to watch a lot of him and he's good. And he replaces while we are big fans of Camden Lewis. He was not good enough this past season. And So you bring in a guy who's got better consistency than Camden Lewis, and at a position that we get to watch. I'm really surprised you did not pick. If you don't go like the glaring one, and special teams is your thing.
Well, Matt, I have to ask you: have you done the pre-scout? Is he the golfer that Cam? Have you seen him out at the range at all?
I have not.
Who don't know, Camden Lewis is a very good golfer, and he and Matt would talk golf quite a bit.
I played golf with Cam in the summer, and it was Luke Basso, and it was ridiculous how far they both could hit the ball, and they both would then say, "Oh yeah, this is like my fourth year playing golf," and it's like, damn you, I hate you.
Face palm. These young athletic kids who are like, just have a lot of natural physical ability. Sappington's another good choice. I like that. And I like anytime we can bring up the name because it's an all-time great.
Tremendous.
Football name. I'll name my freshman. Again, I was going to pick Gabriel here, but I'll pivot over to like, and maybe it's just, I'm intrigued by size. Jaquan McRoy, just want to see a person that big doing things. I've been doing this for a really long time. Matt, I think he's the biggest player that Oregon has like maybe ever had. He's like 6'8 and legitimately 350 or 360 pounds. Like, I know Feope came in at like 6'6, close to 400. But like, I think McRoy is just like going to be like the biggest person we've ever seen.
I'm curious. I'm going to look this up really quickly. I'm curious what Stephen Jones was.
I think the biggest he was listed was like 6'7", 350, or 360. Okay. So that would be comparable size. And that would probably be the best comp physically too, because Stephen Jones wears like, I think James asked him one time, I think Stephen's shoes are like size 20. Like it was something stupid like that. And Jaquan, if you look at photos of him, his feet are also gargantuan.
I do agree that I don't think they've ever had a 6'8 offensive lineman at least play. Right. They may have had one like way down the depth chart as a walk on or something. But the combination of height and weight, I agree with you. Like this might be the biggest player they've ever had along the offensive line or anywhere really on the offensive side of the football. I do wonder, you mentioned, his brother,
Feope,
being near 400 pounds. I think Jones wasn't 400, but I think he may have been like 370. But he's like 3 inches shorter than what Shaq is. And that's what makes Shaq so intriguing is that, he's so heavy, but he's so tall too. It's almost kind of, could he afford to lose weight and get in better shape for football? Absolutely. But you don't look at him and like, holy smokes, this guy is nowhere near playing weight. He needs to lose a bunch. He actually carries it really well.
One of the things I'm actually curious about, Matt, is to that point you made there is he agile and athletic enough to actually play at like 6'8", 350, or 360? Like, because I've been listening to a lot of NFL Combine stuff this spring, and there's an offensive lineman, Amarius Mims from Georgia, who I think is like pretty similar physically. Right. And it sounded like it was almost a good thing that he was so heavy and was able to carry it that way. Like, is it possible that Shaq can do that? I don't know. I just find him to be really fascinating. Again, I don't think there's really any upside of him playing unless someone gets hurt, but he's so fascinating to look at.
2018, Stephen Jones was 6'7", 375.
He's also not 6'7".
Yes.
He also shrunk by 2 inches over the course of
time.
This is the
Mario Cristobal effect of being able to inflate rosters. But that's on Go Ducks. That's Stephen Jones. Unfortunately for you, my man, you lost 2 inches during your time at Oregon.
It's rough. The funniest, by the way, not to go off on too long of a tangent, the funniest one to look at is CJ Verdell. If a fan wants to, I haven't done it in a minute, so I don't remember the exact specifics, but I think he at one point gains an inch. The next year he loses 2 inches and then he gains another inch. And he ended up finishing at like the exact same height he started at, I think, but in between, he was like, 1 year he was 5'11 and 1 year he was 5'8, and it's like he's actually 5'9. So,
Chris Randazzo, that's a name from the past.
Yeah, it is.
He never really played at Oregon, but he was 6'6, 360. in 2019 as well. So, again, to your point, I think you're right. They've never had a guy this tall and this big before. Justin Johnson, like 6'7", 350.
And by the way, both Johnson and Randazzo had to medically retire in part because, and I'm not saying it's entirely because they were just huge, but it might have been in part because they were just too big. So I'm trying to pull up CJ Verdell right now. Go ahead.
Feope, when he arrived in 2020, 6'6", 395.
Yeah.
So that's about the same weight, maybe a little more than Shaq, but 2 inches shorter. So you're right, like, humongous human being, and just seeing him play will be definitively fun to watch.
I'm trying to pull up the CJ Verdell thing, but the new Go Ducks website is so
it's glitchy. Not very good.
It's driving me nuts. The link to click on to look at his height distribution over his career keeps disappearing as I click on it. It's almost like I'm playing some sort of like video game here, trying to actually get what his height is, and I don't know if I'm going to be able to do it. So you go ahead, and if I can chime in later, I will.
Exciting for portals, Jamari Caldwell. They lose a bunch at the defensive line, and yet I think we all agreed on the podcast, they were going to add multiple players. Jared was on board for saying like 4 to 5. I think you and I were maybe saying 2 to 3, but they only added one, and it's Caldwell. And so I think with that makes me super interested in seeing him play and seeing what he can do, because they must have a ton of confidence in his ability to translate right over to Oregon and make a big impact. And then probably also they have confidence in who's returning and who else is joining him from the freshman group. But I think that says a lot about the staff's view towards Caldwell, is that they know they got a guy, and there's going to be a lot of intrigue around him. And I'm just curious to see where he fits, what positions he plays. Does he have position versatility like a Birch or like a Dorlus did? Or even like a Casey Rogers did at Oregon. So that would be my first one. I did have Atticus Sappington as like a honorable mention. I did have Jay Harris as an honorable mention. I am curious about Cam Alexander for the things that you brought up. Like, is he going to push Florence? So those were kind of the names I was tossing around from a JUCO perspective. And then I don't know what it is, and I'm not going to pick the top guys on the team. There's obviously a lot of interest there from a high school ranking perspective, but D.D. Sims, Xavier Sims, a defensive lineman from Oklahoma. Tony Tuioti said exact same type body type as Brandon Dorlus. Similar player. We saw Dorlus show up as a freshman and make an impact on a very good, loaded defensive line. I think the path to playing is easier for Sims because there's less returning talent. And Sims is the higher rated player coming out of high school than Dorlus. And
much higher.
Yes. And maybe it's, I don't want to throw too many lofty expectations on this guy, but I just think there's a chance that he comes in and makes an impact kind of right away for Oregon. And, the path is going to be there defensively for him to be able to play. We would be remiss if we also didn't bring up Rushing and Breland, five stars, guys that could make plays. We'll see where they fit too. But Didi was kind of like my number one guy that I was really looking forward to seeing play out. And then, we'll see who else kind of shows up from a spring perspective and who gets here in time. I know they love Flowers. I know they love Fields. I know they love Iffy. There's a lot of talent on that defense coming in, and there's going to be a lot of freshmen that you could have picked.
I'll just say one thing on Rushing. I'm going to be really fascinated to see how he's competes against last year's crop of edge rushers, because Oregon had three guys that played a lot with Mateo, with Tatum, and with Blake Purchase. Is rushing good enough to just come in? I mean, rushing is a much higher rated recruit than Tatum and Purchase, and quite a bit higher even than Mateo in terms of just where his final ranking ended up. I know at times I think they're very, very comparable, and you know, Mateo at one point was a five-star as well. I'm really going to be fascinated to see just like those guys competing with each other. I didn't include it in a position right. battle to watch necessarily, but like those edge guys, you've got a ton of young Amarion Winston. I have to note. I think that's
yeah, a player.
He's really good. Nobody talks about Amari. He was a higher rated PFF player than any of these other players we talked about last year, and it wasn't all that close. Like he had a higher PFF grade than Jordan Birch and a higher PFF grade than like Popo and Casey Rogers and stuff, and actually played pretty comparable snaps to those guys. I just think there's a lot of interesting stuff going on at edge and rushing. Like, is he immediately good enough to be one of the top two guys, or does he come in and he has to work because there's a bunch of young players? Like, either way, Oregon's going to have a ton of first, second, and third year edge guys that are going to be around for at least a couple of years together, and it should be really fun to watch. So that's I think a good name to bring up too.
All right, predictions. I've got two, and they're both on the offensive side of the football. I know we only said one, but I have two. And I just decided to make the second one a real one.
Go for it.
The first one, I think by the end of spring football, Oregon either is going to come out and just straight up say it, or it's going to just be very obvious that Junior Adams will play more than his 4 or 5 man rotation at the receiver position in 2024 that he historically does. With Holden, Tez, Gary Bryant, Evan Stewart, Jurion Dickey now healthy, and then the freshmen that they are adding into the mix.
It's like 9 guys.
Yeah, there's gonna be bodies, and they're gonna have to play. And I think it's probably not gonna be 8 or 9
no.
guys that play, but it wouldn't surprise me in the slightest, and that's why I'm picking it. We're gonna see 5 to 6 guys play the receiver position on a consistent basis in 2024. And that's going to be based on what we see play out during spring football. I just think they're too loaded to not tap into that.
That's a good one, Matt. Yeah. I didn't write that one down, but that one makes a lot of sense. I co-sign that. I just think you laid it up perfectly. They've got almost too many guys not to play some of them, you know, like I think you look at the last couple of years, I don't know if, like you go, oh, they only played 4 guys, but do they really have a 5th or 6th option was really there? I know Chris is kind of a weird case study because he was a starter and he comes back and he didn't really get involved in there. But I think, you know, I think at a certain level, he knew he wasn't long for playing at Oregon and wanted to preserve eligibility. But like, yeah, I could definitely see them going to like 5 maybe. And like if possibly one of these 2 freshmen is good enough, 6. I do think you've got your core 4.
Yes.
And you brought him up. And then I think between Dickey and Casper, one of those guys should be good enough. And then I'd say open the door for one of these 2 freshmen. But I also understand, like, it's no such, you know, we get excited about the 2 freshmen and we have to temper expectations because sometimes we just don't see them play.
My other one is the one I'm going to be a little bit more bold. I think Patrick Herbert, after the spring, we're going to go, he's got an opportunity to maybe play his way into NFL consideration. I'm not saying draft pick, I'm not saying draft pick, but the body type that he is, I mean, he looked 10 times more athletic in 2023 than he did in 2022 when he was coming off his injury. And ahead of the Fiesta Bowl, Drew Maringer was just gushing about Patrick's ability to have a true offseason free and clear of his injury, or I should say injuries, and what it's going to mean for his development. He said he hasn't had yet an offseason at Oregon where it's devoted strictly to skill development and not devoting it mostly to rehab and building yourself back up. He thinks he's going to take a big jump. I think Ferguson's going to be the best guy at tight end. But I think in 2024 spring ball, we're going to see a different Patrick Herbert, and it's going to set up an idea in the fall that his body type NFL teams will be interested in. Again, he may not get, he probably won't get drafted, but I think his name, his build, his skill set, and where the NFL is at, he will have the eyes and the interest of NFL teams.
He at least has projectable size. Yeah. Like he physically looks like an NFL tight end. You know, I think I'll be curious to your point with some of the movement skills. Like, I think he looks more athletic than he did. You know, 2023 was a lot better than 2022. And then before that, we really just hadn't seen him for a while because of injury. I hope if he adds another step, because this was a guy who in high school I thought was good. I thought the world of him at Sheldon. I went and watched, you know, maybe half a dozen games that year that it was the Oregon coaches' kids or, you know, siblings of Oregon player all-star team over there, because it was Taggart and it was I can't even remember some of the other names here. Michael Johnson's kid, the defensive back coaches' kids. Anyway, like they had a bunch of these kids, so I went and watched a lot, and he was a stud. He was the best of that group pretty clearly. And then he just hasn't been able to be quite that same athlete. But if he gets some of that back, yeah, he could certainly be a guy who gets some NFL consideration. And like, shoot, Hunter Kampmeyer has been on a practice squad for a couple of years. And like, let's be honest, like
that's exactly the reason why I threw Herbert out there. Like, if Kampmeyer can carve out a practice role career, Herbert will have some kind of chance.
You know, and like Johnny Munt, I think he caught a couple touchdowns this year in the NFL. He's had quietly a longish, quiet NFL career, but he's been playing. So like, yeah, maybe it's possible. I like Patrick a lot. And I think it's, again, it's an admirable story because he's hung around for a long time. Do you think Cam McCormick has a chance to get drafted, Matt? Or does he?
No. Was it ninth year? Tenth year?
This is going to be 9 years. It's crazy. I watched him run the 4x1 anchor leg for Summit High School when I was working for like two jobs ago. It's been so long. Anyway, that's a good one. Mine are more broad than what you just, especially the Patrick one. I think we're going to see a true freshman unexpectedly kind of pop. Maybe it won't be unexpected because there's a lot of talented guys. And we'll come out of spring being like, yeah, maybe he's going to start, or maybe he's going to be right there to start, kind of in that conversation. And I wrote down like four or five names here. I think Aaron Flowers is certainly a name. We've kind of talked about it before. There's just not a lot of safety depth, not a lot of players who played much returning. I think there's a chance that he could push to start. And I think he's super talented. He's a top 100 recruit. I think Jericho Johnson is just another name to talk about up front on that defensive line. He is like he's like a true nose tackle. Like, he and Amari Washington on this roster are your most definitive. Like, these are 330 pound plus human beings. Johnson's like 360 or something. These are just big boys to put up front. So I think Jericho's a name. I wrote down Jeremiah McClellan, maybe not quite as much as a possible starter, and instead more of like, he could be in that rotation we were just talking about. And then one of these true freshman linebackers, I think, has a real shot, because once you get past Jestyn and you get past Bossa, who I think are clearly your top two, Devin Jackson has flashed a couple times. I love the Bryce Betcher story. He's a great athlete. I'd love to have him on the team. He's been awesome on special teams. He had a couple of flash moments early last year. I wouldn't be surprised at all, I guess I should say, if Kamar Mathudi or Dylan Williams or Braden Platt, one of those guys ends up being too good, and we come out of spring going, oh, that's a too deep linebacker. So I just think this true freshman class, and again, this is kind of a broad answer, this true freshman class is so good that I think we're going to come out going like, there's two to three maybe guys who are more ready to do big things than we thought, because we've tried to do this, especially I think since the Kingsley Sumatea year, where we kind of were like, yeah, he's going to start. And then he transferred before Halloween. So, you know, I think we've tried to be a little bit more reserved in our predictions. I'm trying to be careful not to predict anyone to be a starter necessarily, but I think there's a possibility this class is far more impactful than what we've seen, certainly under the first couple of years with Dan.
This isn't a prediction because it just simply has to happen. And I'm not going to try and claim anything, but be prepared for transfers. That's going to have to happen. They're over the scholarship limit easily. So we know it's going to have to happen. That's the only way they're going to be able to get there. We won't predict who and where and what have you, but be prepared for transfers to happen during or after spring ball, excuse me, when the portal window opens up. So hopefully you're as excited for spring ball as we are. It's an exciting time. The weather is turning. We're going to be outside watching spring football. Eric and Jared will be at practice next week. I'll be in Vegas for the Pac-12 tournament for basketball. But then when we get back in April, all three of us will be there. We'll have full coverage of it leading up to, during, and after each day of practice all week or all spring. And then concluding with the spring game on April 27th, I believe. Still don't know who it's televised by, and I guess something to look forward to. How did I forget this? Do we have the Pac-12 logo on the uniform, or are they conference unaffiliated and they're just waiting to throw on the Big Ten patch? Or because technically the Pac-12 conference is still alive, they're still part of the conference, but do they just say screw it and throw the Big Ten logo on it?
I'm fascinated by that. I'm fascinated by who covers the spring game. You'd think the Big Ten would be willing to just buy the rights from the Pac-12 if the Pac-12 even has the rights, just because, like, why does the Pac-12 care about presenting a team that is not in their conference, in which case, I think the Big Ten will probably end up showing it, just because I have to think there are a ton of people in Columbus and in Ann Arbor and in all these other, you know, teams that are, like, yeah, these teams that think they're ready to compete, that want to see, like, Oregon has, like, moved up the pecking order in the Big Ten to the point here where it's, like, Oregon or Ohio State are the favorites in the Big Ten. I think there's going to be people in the Midwest who want to see it and be like, is this for real or is this just a bunch of smoke being blown because this team was, you know, a West Coast team that recruits well, has the Nike backing, whatever. Right. I think it'll probably end up being broadcast in the Big Ten network, but I don't know. Like, it's a very strange thing to your point. And yeah, It would be so weird if they telecast it on the Big Ten network, but there was Pac-12 on the field and on all the jerseys too. So it's just a strange spot.
All right, it's gonna do it for us here on the Odds and Audibles podcast. Thank you for listening to the show. We'll be back next week with more podcasts as well, and then throughout spring football. Until then, you've been listening to the Odds and Audibles podcast.
Talk to you later, folks.